Unit 7, Part 1, London. London, capital of England, is one of the most cosmopolitan cities in the world, with its population of Indians, Pakistanis, Bangladeshis, Africans, West Indians, Cypriots, Chinese, and many more. It is in some ways as much a Commonwealth city as British city. And it is, of course, an international center for tourism. The tourist season in London, which used to be mainly in the summer months, is now all year round. And of the 15 million people who visit Britain each year, most spend at least a few days in London. But London is more than this. It is the center of government and the home of the Queen. It is also the financial center of Britain. When people talk about the city, they are referring not to London itself, but to a small area called the City of London. The City of London contains the Stock Exchange, the Bank of England, and all the major financial institutions. London was originally established by the Romans, who chose the site of Londonium for its good trading and defensive position. When the Romans left, Winchester became the capital of England until the 13th century, when administration was moved to London. London's growth in the Middle Ages brought overcrowding, lack of sanitation, and unhealthy conditions. Outbreaks of bubonic plague, the Black Death, were very common. In 1666, the Great Fire of London destroyed much of the city. Many of London's finest buildings date from the subsequent period of intensive planning and rebuilding. St. Paul's Cathedral is only one example. The 18th and 19th centuries saw London's growth as an international center of trade and finance. During the 20th century, London's international importance had declined. Today, it has to compete as a financial center with New York, Tokyo, and other major capitals. Part 2. Taxis in Great Britain. There are about 56,000 licensed taxis in Great Britain, mainly in urban areas. London has about 17,500. In London and several other major cities, taxis must be purpose-built to conform to very strict requirements, and new ones have to provide for people in wheelchairs. In many urban districts, drivers must have passed a test of their knowledge of the area. At present, a local authority can only limit the number of licensed taxis if it is satisfied that there is no unfulfilled demand for taxis in its area. Private hire vehicles with drivers may be booked only through the operator and not hired on the street. In most areas outside London, private hire vehicles are licensed. The government launched a review of the taxi licensing regime in England and Wales in October 1993. There are about 4,000 licensed taxis in Northern Ireland. Licenses are issued by the Department of the Environment for Northern Ireland on a basis broadly similar to that in Great Britain. 1. About how many licensed taxis are there in Great Britain? 2. How many licensed taxis are there in London? 3. Which of the following statements is true about all taxis in London and other major cities? 4. Which of the following statements is true about taxi drivers in many urban areas? 5. Which of the following statements is true about private hire vehicles with drivers? 6. When did the government make a review of the taxi licensing regime in England and Wales? 7. About how many licensed taxis are there in Northern Ireland?
Part 3. About a London taxi driver.
The law on taxis is very interesting, and I know in London it's different from other places and rules are quite strict, aren't they?
Any London cab driver does a thing called the knowledge, which is an examination, really. It's called the knowledge, and it's a basic test of 468 runs, what they call runs, from a blue book.
And the idea is that anybody can get into a taxi anywhere in London and give the driver a destination, and he's got to know the way there.
That's the basis of the knowledge, finding anywhere from point A to B in that 6-mile radius in London.
Is it difficult to learn the knowledge?
Average, it took me 19 months. Now it's taken guys 3 years because they want. You've got to have a medical, you're checked out by the police, you do the knowledge, but after you've done the basic knowledge, there's still more exams to do. It can take anywhere, now, from 2 to 3 years, and then you do a driving test at the end.
I get the impression they're very strict about taxis. Quite apart from the knowledge, there's the license. Do you have to have a license every year?
The license is renewed 3 years. But for your cab, whether you rent it or you own it, has to have a yearly overhaul, which is a very strict passing test, and there are some real stringent tests it's got to pass.
Is it really worth it all?
Yeah, I think it's worth it. I enjoy being a taxi driver, and not only that, it does keep the standard very high, which is what we want in London.
Do you feel proud to be a Londoner? Were you born in London?
No. I was actually born in Bristol, but I came up to London when I was 12.
Do you think of yourself as a Bristolian or a Londoner?
A few people think I'm still a country boy, because I've still got that accent in me. I haven't really got a typical London Cockney accent, but I see myself as a Londoner, definitely now, because I've been up here a lot longer.
What do you do in your spare time?
Well, I'm into bodybuilding. That takes up quite a good deal of my spare time, basically.
How much time?
I might do a system of 3 days training with a day off, followed by another 3 days training and a day off.
Where do you go to train?
I train at Ultra Sport Gym. That's up in Norwood.
Forgive my ignorance, but are we talking about some of Mr. Universe here? With you standing up in front of an audience and playing music and putting oil on your body and all that sort of thing? Is that the kind of bodybuilding you do?
Well, when you get seriously into the sports, you are literally building your body. All areas of your body. So on a Monday, for example, you might just train your chest with your triceps. And on the Tuesday you might, I don't know, your back and legs. You split your body up.
Is just weights, or do you have a lot of gadgets?
We've got machines up there, but it's not a high gloss, sort of fitness center that you see some other gyms have got. It's a lot of free weights.
Do you have somebody supervising your training?
No, I train with 2 other regular partners. Part 4. An American in London.
What were the things in Britain that you found most strange when you first arrived?
Well, the first thing is driving on the wrong side of the road. That was very strange, because you have this automatic reflex when you go out into the street to look one way, and a couple of times I did that, and I almost got hit by cars and bikes and all. It's dangerous. It really is dangerous. And you have to teach yourself to look the other way.
Someone said that Britain and the United States are divided by a common language. Have you had any difficulties with the language here?
Oh, yeah. Tremendous amount of difficulty. But I'm starting to pick it up now. All the lingo and slang and all those. But there's definitely a difference.
Can you give me any examples?
Well, the big... I'd say some of the biggest ones would be the word Q, which means in America, line. I never heard the word Q before. What do you call chips? I call French fries. I never heard them called chips. There's so many. Words that are different. Crisps, which mean potato chips. Yeah, that's... We call them potato chips, or chips, in America. You call them crisps here. So, when I heard the word chips, I was thinking of crisps, and not French fries. You know, it's very confusing. But just some of the expressions like, mate, you know, and love. Those, you know, they're funny. You don't hear them. You don't hear them in America.
What about with young people? With people your own age, I mean. Do you notice differences there?
I do notice some differences. I think the younger people in Britain are... They seem to be much more radical than the younger people in the United States. I notice that. The dress is different. You see a lot of... I see a lot of males here with earrings in one of their ears. You don't see that in America that much. Maybe here and there, but not like you see it here. So many of the young people wear black clothing, you know. You don't see the other colors. At home you see all different types of bright colors. And in England you see so much black, especially on the women.
You don't like that?
Not really. It's just my own preference. I'd rather see different colors here and there. Not all one color. Everyone looks like Madonna.
When you say radical, are you just thinking of clothes or anything else?
No. I think, radical as in going against the norms, could you say. Not only in clothing, but I think in politics, too. Whereas in America, you don't find that as much. Oh, also, another difference is the younger people are... They're more politically aware on a larger level. See, a lot of the Americans, they're aware of the government of the United States and maybe a few other countries, but not as many countries in Europe, or they just have a vague understanding of how those other countries are run, not as widespread. Whereas here, I think that they, the kids get to know about how different countries are run at a much younger level, and they know all about the United States and how it's run.
What do you think the reasons are for that?
That's a good question. Well, I think that the reasons are just because of the press. You hear so much about America here that people are, they're into it. They want to know what it's about and how it's run. And so many of our policies in America affect Britain that they want to understand how policies are made and all that. And seeing that doesn't work on the other level, like Britain's policies don't... I mean, they can affect us, but not to as great an extent, and therefore you don't hear as much about Britain, and people don't know as much about it. Part 5. The Civil Rights Movement in the USA. The 1950s and 1960s were years of great struggle for black Americans. Although slavery had been abolished in 1863, segregation in the 1950s, the separate and unequal treatment of blacks by whites, was still the custom in the northern part of the United States. In the southern states, it was the law. As an example, suppose you were a black citizen in Montgomery, Alabama, in 1954. A simple bus ride into town could be very frustrating. When the bus stopped for you, you paid the driver in front of the bus. However, as a black person, you were not allowed to sit in the front. The front was for whites only. So, after paying the driver, you had to get off the bus, walk to the back, enter at the rear door, and sit down in the back. What happened if the front of the bus was full and more white passengers got on? Well, you had to give up your seat in the back and ride standing. That was the law. On Thursday, December 1st, 1955, something important happened. On the day, Mrs. Rosa Parks, a middle-aged black woman, refused to give up her seat to a white man. The bus driver called the police, and she was arrested. This one small event helped change the direction of American history. It also marked the beginning of the career of the most famous black American leader, Martin Luther King Jr. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was a young minister in a black church in Montgomery. When he heard about Mrs. Parks' arrest, he, along with other black leaders in the city, decided to protest it. They organized a boycott of the buses for one day. That is, every black person in Montgomery was asked to stay off the buses for one full day. The boycott was a complete success. Because about 70% of the bus company's customers were black, the buses drove almost empty all day long. Later that day, black leaders decided to continue the boycott until the company promised black riders better treatment. As the boycott went on with Dr. King as its leader, the white people of Montgomery became more and more upset and angry. Dr. King was put in jail and beaten, and his house was bombed. But throughout all this, Martin Luther King told his people to meet violence with nonviolence, and to meet hate with love. Because of his powerful message of nonviolence, no one was killed during the entire year of the boycott. Finally, in 1965, the United States Supreme Court said it was illegal to segregate blacks and whites on buses, trains, or planes. Martin Luther King had taught his people a new way to win their rights. After the bus boycott, the use of nonviolent protest against segregation became popular throughout the South. Dr. King led many peaceful marches against segregation in restaurants, movie theaters, and other public places. On August 28, 1963, the biggest march of all was held. More than 1 million people from all parts of the country, black and white, young and old, marched on Washington, D.C. They wanted Congress to pass a national law against segregation and discrimination. At that meeting, Dr. King gave one of the most famous speeches in American history. In it, he talked about his hopes for America and the world. "I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day, right down in Alabama, little black boys and little black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today. This is our hope. This is the faith that I go back to the South with. With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day. So let freedom ring. When we allow freedom to ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, 'Free at last, free at last, great God Almighty, we're free at last.'" 2 years after Dr. King gave this famous speech, one of his goals was achieved. The Civil Rights Act of 1964 became a new law that made it illegal to segregate blacks or other minorities or discriminate against them. In the same year, Martin Luther King also received the Nobel Peace Prize. His work was far from finished, however. He continued to fight for civil rights not only in the South, but also in northern cities like Chicago and Detroit, which had large numbers of unemployed black workers. His message was still one of nonviolence, although some young black leaders no longer accepted it as a way to win equality. Many did not believe in Dr. King's way of love and peace. In 1968, violent riots broke out in New York, Detroit, and Los Angeles, poisoning the air of the country with hatred and violence. The horrible climax came on April 4, 1968, when Martin Luther King Jr. was shot to death by a white man. Thanks to Dr. King and the Civil Rights Movement, Black Americans and other minorities have won many rights in the last 30 years. Today, no shop owner can legally refuse to accept a customer because of a race. Public facilities must be made available to all people. Schools can no longer be for white children only. Segregation has been made illegal. But have prejudice and discrimination completely disappeared from our society? Not at all. The struggle against them continues. Part 6. Listening and Translation. A. Sentence Translation.
1. Only in this way can enterprises have strong competitiveness to vie with their domestic and overseas counterparts.
2. Share prices fluctuated narrowly in surprisingly thin trading volume after the long holiday.
3. Australia has long been a major exporter of raw materials to the world, but it is now looking to make a name for itself as an exporter of high technology.
4. The construction of the factory will start by the end of this year and production in June 2005.
5. Shanghai is a world-famous city. Shanghai has been a window to the West. It is the city in which my country and yours issued the communique that began our modern friendship.
B. Passage Translation.
1. A hotel is a temporary home for people who are traveling. In a hotel, the traveler can rest and has access to food and drink, either on the premises or nearby. The hotel may also offer facilities for recreation, such as a swimming pool, a golf course, or a beach. In many cases, the hotel also provides free space for the traveler's means of transportation, which nowadays is the automobile. All of these services are designed to accommodate the traveler, so the hotel business is often referred to as the accommodations industry.
2. Here's a job possibly for somebody who's a school leaver. It requires no experience at all, but training will be given on the job, and the pay is $280 a week. What's the job? Well, it's a shop assistant in a busy supermarket. It's a full-time job, but the big thing is you don't need any experience. So if you're just leaving school and fancy working in a supermarket, try that. You get one day off during the week, and you must work one late evening till 9:30 p.m. Okay? So, that's a shop assistant. Well, if you fancy any of these jobs, give us a ring here at Radio Southwest.